Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim. And dude, it feels like we have been here before because today we are going to talk about none other than Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young. And very quietly, Young. Dallas Taylor and Greg Reeves, as their names are a little smaller.
Smaller font. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice gatefold, dude, in there, dude.
Nice looking vinyl. Single record, I presume.
Of course. But it's got feels like little footballs. Nice texture.
Little footballs, there. Yeah.
Pigskin.
So, dude, would you say this is the first supergroup?
Boy, I really think... Well, maybe the second supergroup, because where do you put Cream?
Ooh, that's a good point.
But
okay.
But yeah, I think this is the first U.S. supergroup, probably.
Sure, that's fair. Even though our boy Neil Young is from
Canada. Yeah,
but they formed in the U.S.
And actually, is Graham Nash from England? I don't.
So,
but other than that, first half U.S. or at least. Yeah. The U.S. is represented in this supergroup.
Yeah. Now, actually, one question I do have. Mm-hmm. So this album came out, another band that could be potential. This album came out March 11, 1970. Rock and Roll Circus was filmed on December 11th and 12th, 1968. So there's a little band, another supergroup called the Dirty Mac. Now they never formally put out like a full album.
In fact, they only played two songs.
Yeah, they did play together, and it has been recorded. So
yeah, so it counts.
They should be considered, but they
should be.
But I think this, you know, yeah, I guess I would say Cream, but these guys
I mean, had just a legitimate career. I mean, the Dirty Mac was a one night special.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, this was a real band, and it was funny because the whole bit of it was that it formed out of the ashes of these other bands. So other the bands. Birds, the Hollies, and the Buffalo Springfield.
Springfield. Yeah, the Crosby was asked to leave the Birds.
Yeah.
And then Stills, Buffalo Springfield broke up. Nash left the Hollies, or I guess he left the Hollies. I don't know if they broke up. And then they kind of just, they got together. I think they were at a party or something, and they played. And a couple of them got together and like, oh, yeah, we sound really good together. And then they added one more. And then they were looking essentially for like a keyboardist. And that's how Neil Young kind of got into the band, because they were like, because he had played in Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah.
And basically they were like, well, you know, he can play keyboards, but he also plays guitar. He can play a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah. So that helps.
And that it definitely worked. But it was weird because they even said like that Stills had reservations just because they knew each other from the Buffalo Springfield. So
that's true, because all the other ones were just a single pull, right? That was the only. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, and even in the 60s documentary, the one thing they all said was like, they're like, well, wait a minute. Like, we're, you know, none of us
want to be in a band anymore.
And we realized, oh, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to be in a band.
Yeah.
Now I thought it was interesting, though, for the recording of this album, it seemed to be a lot of like isolated sessions where they would send the tapes around and they would come in and put their parts in. I think Neil Young was down in L.A. a lot, and the other three were.
Yeah, because he lived in San Laurel Francisco. Canyon, I think.
Right. Yeah. And so they'd send the tapes and stuff like back and forth and everything. And I just found that interesting. There were only a couple of songs on the album, I believe Woodstock and maybe another track, that they were all in the studio together.
Yeah.
And maybe that's for people who don't want to be in a band. Maybe that they're like, this is what's going
to
happen. But there was still friction within the band too, though.
Sure. I get the sense that definitely David Crosby and probably Neil Young were difficult people to work with.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you're like, you know, a lot of people do want to be sort of, I don't know, I don't know if I'd say the leader, but sort of the decision maker.
Yeah, you sure.
Know? Like, this is good or this is shit, right? Like,
yeah. So whatever.
You know, not everybody can be a Janine.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I mean,
it takes a very, very special person. But they even had a deal with Neil Young where it was like, okay, yeah, you'll play with us, but you can still do stuff with Crazy Horse as well.
Oh, sure. Okay. Now, one thing I think is that's interesting to note is this album, I believe, has sold better than anything that these any of them did individually.
Really?
Yeah. I believe this album is the best-selling album that any one of them have participated in.
Interesting. Man, that's hard. I would say it's hard to believe, but I guess I would expect Harvest to maybe, you know, one of Neil Young's albums, I guess I would expect to have maybe outperformed this one. Well, if it's going to
be one, it'd be Harvest, but I believe I read that it was this one.
Interesting. Okay.
But I mean, dude, it's certified 7 times platinum, having sold more than 8 million copies.
You never go platinum.
And that's still probably happening because I know that a few, maybe last year or whenever its 50th anniversary was.
Anniversary.
They did like a super enormo dome vinyl edition of it.
Yeah. Well, even the one that I downloaded, like, yeah, disc one, it has the album. Then disc two has a bunch of demos.
Yeah.
A bunch of demos.
I would have thought about getting that, but I mean, this copy I have is just.
Oh, it looks awesome.
Dude, it's in very, very good condition for its age. And the vinyl's in great shape as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, like this special Enormo Dome edition has like 4 discs, early versions, demos, alternate stuff, all that kind of stuff. Doesn't look like a lot of live. I would really like to see some live recordings on here. If you're gonna do like a 4-disc anniversary, like give us a show.
I know, yeah, that's fair. I can tell you on the Woodstock record that I have, I know that there's at least a live version of Wooden Ships.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, for some reason on that one, because you always hear the Sweet to Judy Blue Eyes, which is funny because they were actually a little out of tune when they did that. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it's funny because I think that they were up on stage and one of them said like, yeah, man, we're kind of shitting ourselves right now. This is our first gig.
And yeah, actually, it was their second. It was their second show. Yeah, it was their second show. Yeah, I forget which one said it, but they're like, yeah, you know, we're just basically not trying to mess up at that point.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But their live version of Wooden Ships was good. I liked it. And it was pretty solid.
Plus, everybody, you know, was just super stoned and,
you
know, probably took the brown acid.
Oh, yeah. Well, even though they said not to on the PA. Yeah.
Yeah. Too late.
It was not the Owlsley.
Dude. Okay. Where, I mean, is that something you want to hear after you, if you're one of those people who took it like 2 hours ago?
No, you're like,
you know what I mean?
It's going to be a weird night.
You're like, wait a minute. Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
No,
like,
well, maybe the one I took was light brown.
Yeah, dude,
not, more of a tan, good,
man. but yeah, so they, you know, they got Neil Young to play on. It was kind of like on that tour, essentially, and they went on. It was a 39 show tour, and the second one was Woodstock. They also played Altamont, but they requested that their performance not be included in the film Gimme Shelter.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that for?
Yeah. At Altamont?
Yeah. Why was that?
I think they just didn't want to be associated with the disaster that Altamont was.
Wow.
I imagine that was the case.
Okay. Interesting.
But yeah, they recorded it back and forth between San Francisco and Hollywood. Still said it took around 800 hours of studio time, but that might be exaggerated, apparently.
Yeah, but I calculated that out. That's 33 and a third days, so that's over a month.
Is that like 8-hour days or 24 hours in a day?
Oh, that would be 24-hour days. Yeah. I just did the straight math. So if you did work days, then you divide, then you'd what, multiply that by three?
So it's three months or so, three or 4 months. Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of time. I would be interested to get a little, and I wish that there was a little, that there was some more
meat.
No, just some, yeah, a little more info on how they did it, because I have to assume that even if all of them weren't there to put in their vocals, I mean, dude, you had to do like the basic backing tracks of drums and bass and guitar and.
Sure. Yeah. I imagine. Right.
Yeah. You would think so. I don't know. There was an a disc that was released in Record Store Day 2021 of alternate takes of the songs, limited to 10,000 copies, and featured an alternate album cover.
Interesting. Well,
if I see that, I might pick it up.
So there are, I'm looking on this extra disc, and it does have some of those, like, you know, harmonica version, alternate vocal version, early alternate mix, alternate take two.
So maybe for some of these songs,
you know, I struggle with that. Like, I think a lot of people get roped in, and I certainly have gotten roped in the past when it's like, oh, cool, I want to hear, like, you know, the early version or a different version. And sometimes it's cool if it's like, you know, like a really, like it's a rock song, and then the early version's like acoustic or it's on the piano. Like, sure, it's significantly different. But, like, you know, some of those Bob Dylan ones that we've, you know, seen on some of his discs, where it's just like, I mean, they recorded a lot of those tracks live, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's pretty much
what it was. Yeah. And it's like, hey, this is, here's version 7. And they would just go back and listen to them, and they'd be like, well, you know, I think version 3 is the best. We're going to go with that one. But there's like 9 other versions. And it's just, I don't know, man. It doesn't really do it for me if it's like pretty much the same thing. I don't need to hear, like,
it actually kind of pissed me off when I bought Highway 61 Revisited. And the version of Like a Buick 6 is not the one that was on the CD that I bought when I purchased that album a long time ago. And it just, again, not that it's bad. It's just everything down to the little vocal and flat, you know, like, it just, it's not.
Dude, it just sounds weird to yours. Now, if that was the version that you had always heard,
I'd be fine.
You know
it.
What I mean? You'd be like, yeah, oh, this is great. But your ears, it just, something seems foreign. It's like my Nirvana In Utero remix of 2013. It's just like, okay, it just sounds a little weird. So.
Yep. So anyways, 800 hours, the track Deja Vu, they estimated that it took 100 takes. Damn. So I'd like to hear how that one turned out live.
Yeah, I would like to hear the difference. I just want to hear, one, did they use just like track 100, or, you know, the 100th take, and like, well, that's it. Like, I'd like to hear how it sounded on, like, the first try versus the last try. Like, see, you know, I would actually like to hear, like, wow, okay, did it actually change or evolve?
Well, and that song has got some sharp changes in it. You know, that's kind of the thing where I can see it being a little difficult. Whereas they said the track Carry On, in 8 hours, they had recorded, mixed, and mastered that, like, done, out the door, ready to go.
Ready to go.
Which is, you know...
It's funny, though, that things like that happen. I mean, and we'll get into more of the tracks, but some of them, they're like, yeah, I just wrote it. I sat down and wrote it. Boom. It was done.
Yeah.
And then other times it's like, man, we just couldn't get this part right. We didn't know, you know, they spend weeks on it. So but they also talked about the mood of recording this album was very different, because they had all pretty much just ended relationships. Like, Nash and Joni Mitchell had split up.
Crosby's girlfriend had died.
Yeah. Was killed, I guess. Like, didn't just pass away.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know any backstory. So if anybody knows backstory on that,
go ahead and, do the thing.
We definitely like to know a little more backstory on that. I'm sure it's out there. I just didn't really dig deep enough to do my homework there. But yeah, they had all pretty much broken up with someone and, or ended a relationship. And, you know, that can be hard on anyone, especially when you're in a creative process. So maybe that's part of the reason that they all, I don't know, kind of didn't want to stay in the studio and record, and they were just out and they were finding themselves again, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Now, would you like to get into the tracks here, Senor Grimm?
Yeah, I think it's just as well, mate.
Just about that time. All right, we're going to start with track number one. Carry on.
One morning, I woke up and I knew you
were. Well, so this one's written by Stills, and it seems like if you look at each song sort of on the album, it's almost like they each get like two songs that are kind of each one is the main contributor of. And this is, you know, I guess this is his. But sort of the story is Graham Nash told Stills when they were like halfway through the recording, he was like, yeah, we don't have like an opening track for the album. Like, you know, like one that we're like,
yeah.
Hey, this is and that's always like you and I always talk about the importance of that. And I think it sounds like it was important for them. They're like, hey, you know, the opening track's important because this is what like hooks people in. And
oh, yeah.
Even if it's not like a single. And so they basically Stephen Stills took two unfinished songs and he like put them together to a jam that they had a few nights prior and kind of came up with this.
That's pretty cool. And it's interesting that I think how you mentioned about maybe it wouldn't be a single. This was one of the singles, but funny, it was the fourth one off the album.
That is interesting.
But I like the organ. I mean, I like how you can tell it's kind of two parts, but I like how they meld them together. And the organ is great though. In the song,
it really reminds me something Santana would do.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Yeah, when I heard that, I was like, oh, man. I was like, I can just really feel that in some Santana songs.
Although now, it's funny because, boy, you don't, now that I think about it, you don't hear a whole lot of acoustic guitar in Santana.
That's fair. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Well, one thing you do hear in this song is acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
But so it was funny when I was like listening to this, I was like, man, dude, this really reminds me of Led Zeppelin Friends. Like
a ton. Oh like, yeah, I can see why ton. You would say that.
And then, and dude, it's funny. Then I started researching and reading about it, and Led Zeppelin says that this song inspired Friends.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because I was gonna say Friends is a little darker, but very much a similar sort of attack on the way they play it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. When I heard it again this time, because I hadn't listened to this for a while, and I was like, oh my god, I was like. Like I could really just like almost pull apart out of this and put it in Friends and feel like it would fit there. So
interesting.
Moving on, track number two, Teach Your Children.
You who are on the road must have a code that you can live by.
Pretty good song, man.
It is. Yeah, and a good message too.
Yeah, I think so. And it is just funny how it goes. It starts with, you know, teach your children well, and then it switches in the second time to teach your parents well, right?
Yeah, I do like that. Now it's funny. One thing we talked about offline, and as I'm sort of looking at the track list, it reminds me of it. A lot of people have So Far by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, which is more or less their greatest hits. And if you look on So Far, I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
oh, it's like half,
6, 7 songs off of the 10 on here, I think, are on there.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what ones aren't on there? What, probably Almost Cut My Hair probably isn't on there.
Yeah, Almost Cut My Hair isn't.
Everybody Girl, I Love You.
Everybody I Love You.
Everything else is on there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it starts with, So Far starts with Deja Vu, I think. I had, that's the CD I had, yeah.
Yeah.
It is pretty cool.
But, I think, it's funny, I think Graham Nash's songs, I like them both. They're very much alike, though. And they're very like, I don't know, it's interesting. They're very much talking about, like, family, and it's like... It sounds like he was ready to settle down with Joni Mitchell.
Oh, I'm sure he was. Yeah. I mean, because, dude, that was Joni Mitchell at like the height of her, I think, fame pretty much.
Oh, really?
Isn't it? I mean, I think so. I mean, this is the area that the era that I always remember her from mostly. But that's, I guess that's kind of you know, what I was listening to. I mean, I remember just from the 60s documentary, like,
you know,
the Hate the Performer Festival.
Yeah.
Talking about that. Give us some respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, teach your children well. I'm trying to think if I have anything else here. Oh, dude, did you see that? The pedal steel guitar played by Jerry Garcia. Oh,
I did see that. That is great. There's a couple other musicians that make their way in this album, but yeah, I thought that was really cool that Garcia played it, because when I was looking, just reading some other stuff on them, I think it was Wooden Ships. Paul Kantner's on that.
Yeah, I saw something about that too. Was it Wooden Ship? There was another song I saw Paul Kantner was at least involved with the writing and whatnot. And it's cool that a lot of those artists were just kind of like, they hung out, right?
Yeah,
yeah. They're like hanging around. So like the deal that Jerry Garcia had with these guys is essentially, hey, I'll come in and I'll play this part, but you guys have to help us improve our vocal harmonies for our next couple of albums, which would be Working Man's Dead and American Beauty.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was like, he's like, yeah, you know, I'll do this for you. You guys do this for me. And, you know, man, those albums are, I mean, American Beauty is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's gorgeous. But track number 3, Almost Cut My Hair. Little Crosby song, man.
Yeah, I really like this one because I don't know, it to me it embodies really like the 60s spirit. Like, I mean, he says, I'm gonna let my freak flag fly, like fly. the whole bit is there, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, he talked about sort of the point of the story is, or the song is like that it was sort of like this dilemma a little bit, like in the hippie community, you know, like cutting, you know, do you cut your hair? Like, when do you cut your hair? Do you want to be a little more, you know, because it initially at one point, or what kind of when it started, was like a form of rebellion, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, are we, you know, are we past that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the ones, I guess, I think they did this one, and I want to say it was Woodstock, where they recorded at the same time. In place. And it was, it said it was only one of two songs from the album, that Neil Young, joined in on, even though he didn't write it. So that was interesting.
So he didn't play on the other songs?
The ones that he didn't write, I guess.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting. If I read that right. But dude, this one has, what I love about it, it's got the guitar. It has the old school like dot matrix printer sound.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. Ugh,
it's freaking sweet, man.
Yeah, I do like that too.
All right, Graham. Track number 4. Feeling a little helpless.
There is a town in North Ontario. Comfort memory to spare.
Clearly a Neil Young song. I mean,
very,
and
very
based clearly. On the fact that the opening line is like, there is a town in North Ontario.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I feel like this is like a song you could have just heard on Harvest, man.
Oh, like absolutely. Yeah. You
know, it's a very, very sort of sentimental song. But the thing is, I feel like if it was on Harvest, it, you know, it wouldn't have had those harmonies that Crosby, Stills, and Nash really bring in. And that's, you know, it's
true.
I mean, it's so cool because for them, that's such like a such a staple. Right.
I mean,
it's like it's such a beautiful they all sound really, really good together.
Yeah, they do.
It's interesting how that in itself is almost like at the forefront, like an instrument.
Oh, yeah, as it should be. I mean, even though many could argue if anyone was going to make a really fine example of the voice being used as a musical instrument, it would be Yoko Ono. But I'd vote these guys.
definitely. I would go with these guys too. All right, Grim, track number
five. We get
five.
To the cover.
Woodstock.
We are Stockholm. We are Golden. We are big.
Yeah. Now I'm more familiar with the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, this version than
I think most people are.
Dude, it's just a great song. Is this probably would you say this is the most well-known song off the album?
Maybe not for people who aren't fans.
Yeah.
Just lay people, as they would call them in the church.
The lay people. I'm sure a lot of people have heard like Teacher Children.
Yeah, Deja Vu. I don't know. It's hard. But to me, this has all the right elements of a really good cover. They took an already very well-crafted song and they gave it something that it didn't have before. They changed it. They made it different. And they made it rock. Not to say that... No discredit to Joni Mitchell's version. That just wasn't the kind of artist she was. And so I think it was cool to take a song like that and reimagine it as a rock band.
Well, dude, did you see that Stills worked on the arrangement with Jimi Hendrix? And Jimi Hendrix, he had a version of it and played bass guitar and overdubbed guitar on it. I haven't heard that version.
But I would like to.
I think when they came out with the Enormo Dome, the reissue, I think it might actually be on that. So I should
That's look sweet, because I knew that him and Hendrix were friends, and he was looking to Hendrix to teach him about just having more prowess on the guitar as a soloist.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to find that version. I do see on the special edition there is a version, but it just says alternate vocals, so I don't know. But I know there is a version. I think it's actually on a Hendrix special edition or something that came out.
Oh, interesting.
I think that might be where it is. But all right, Graham, on the album, I believe this is where we flip it, correct?
It is, my friend.
All right, side two, track one, Deja Vu.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to say it. This had to start something, and I get why maybe they didn't want it to open the album, but it had to start something. And it's a great way to start side two. I've always liked how this song comes in.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just got that. And then they have the count off, the one, two, three, four. Have I ever been? It's so funny, man. The way they all sing, and they sing so.
Don't you?
Fast. Don't you?
He's got that. He's got like a bit of force to it.
Yeah, dude. The way he sings, "Don't You," is just really, really funny.
I wonder how many takes just that took, because he was like, "Nah, that one was just a little. Yeah. No, I just didn't have my whole heart in it."
We have always been here before. I always remember us listening to that, I think, freshman year. And those are the things that just great little things and hooks. But you could actually, for us, we're laughing at it because it's just kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't sing with it in any way that would do anything justice, because they do an excellent job with the vocals, because they're at varying tempos and the song speeds up and slows down.
Slow it down.
And you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good song. Well, moving on to track number two, Our House.
Come to me now, and rest your head for just 5 minutes. Everything is done.
Did you read a little bit about he wrote this in an hour or something?
Yeah, I believe it.
I mean, so him, and it's biographical, I guess, autobiographical of essentially what happened. They had breakfast at a deli. They went to a store and picked up a vase. brought it home, and Nash was like, hey, go, you know, why don't you go outside and pick some flowers for the vase? I'll start the fire. I'll light the fire. And he said, though, he was like, oh, it was great, because he was like, I told her to go out and get the flowers. So that meant the piano was free. And so he actually was able to do it. And he said, yeah, he came up and wrote the song in like an hour. And it's like, dude, it's just one of those ones where, and it's beautiful, man. It's a really beautiful song. Yeah, it is a
sweet song.
You know, I guess they had two cats, but I always, dude, like, our house is a very, very, very fine house. Like, dude, it's just fine so house. Funny, man.
Yeah, I know.
But, moving on, track number three, 4 + 20.
24 years ago, I come into this life, the son of a woman and a man who lived in strife. He was tired of being poor.
I don't know why that combination of numbers comes up a lot in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Aside from the meaning of the 420. Other meaning. Yeah.
Well, when I was like in college and I was just, you know, on Napster and LimeWire and stuff, like downloading songs, I went through my Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young phase of downloading songs. And this was like one of the tracks. I was like, I downloaded it and I thought, I was like, oh, I bet this isn't the title. I bet, you know, somebody just put it on there as sort of like a joke, like, oh, you want to get stoned to this song? Because that's, you know, I was also like 19 and that's pretty much where my head was at. But yeah, it was interesting. Like, so Stills wrote the song and it's about like an old man,
a poor man,
you know, who started and finished, I guess, with nothing. It's like, man, mm-hmm. that's, you know, yeah. I mean, I guess we all start sort of with nothing in a way.
He went out on zero balance,
you know? Yeah. Sometimes maybe that's not so bad, but I did think it was interesting that this is basically a solo song and,
Crosby true. And Nash, I guess
no, it's Crosby and Nash heard it and they were like, no, please put it on this album. And Stills was like, okay, but I want you guys to put like harmonies and stuff and let's like do this a band. And they were like, no, it's too good. Like, no, just he did it in one take too.
Jeez.
So I just thought it was, you know, that was a really cool kind of story. It's like, hey, we did this song in one take. Just, we want it on the album and, you know, refusing. I mean, that as much as you may want to, you know, we can talk about, you know, these guys have egos and stuff like that. That does take a lot to step back and just, you hear something great and you're like, yeah, there's absolutely nothing I can do to improve it. Yeah. So, track number four, Country Girl.
Winding paths through tables and glass. First fall was
Whiskey Boot Hill, Down, Down, Down.
Yeah.
Girl, I think you're pretty.
Yeah. So the second Neil Young composition on it, which I think he took a bunch of, I don't know if it was unfinished, but he took a bunch of things that he had from the Buffalo Springfield days and sort of fused them.
It's basically his Paranoid Android.
Yeah, sure.
Or Happiness is a Warm Gun. You know, let's just put three songs together. I mean, that's essentially what it was. But yeah, it was like Whiskey Boot Hill was a song that he worked on in 67. And I guess they said he released a string quartet arrangement of the song on his solo debut album, Neil Young.
Okay.
And the second section of the song he had recorded with the Buffalo Springfield, but not hadn't been released.
Interesting.
Yeah, but apparently they said that this song uses the wall of sound approach of one Phil Spector.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that most of the song is recorded live except for the backing vocals.
He turned into be just a real dipshit, that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just say he made some poor choices. Wow. All right, then we're moving on. Last track of the album, Everybody, I Love You.
Everybody,
You know, this is one that, yeah, it didn't make the greatest hits, so I wasn't overly familiar with it. I think it's a nice rock song. You know, I imagine that's Neil Young playing guitar. I don't know who gets credit for this one. Didn't you see who gets credit
For writing it? Stills and Young.
It's Stills and Young. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't have too much to add about this one. It was just one I was really unfamiliar with. It's a good song.
Yeah.
And, you know, rocks, and Neil Young really kind of gets to rip and go off a little bit. So
yep.
I'm sure he enjoyed that. But all right. Well,
it wraps first, it up, mate.
It does wrap it up. Grim, give me your what's your favorite track on this album?
Deja Vu. I'm going title track.
Okay. Okay, Deja Vu. Yeah, I can't argue with that. I would say for me, it's probably between Deja Vu and... you know, I actually probably would go Woodstock.
Carry On's pretty... That was my other one.
Oh,
just kind of...
Yeah. But I could also just listen to Friends, too, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. This is the point in the show where we gotta be those guys.
Gotta make the tough choices.
We gotta... You know, scratch some perfection here.
Yep.
Do you want
me? We gotta do things because they're hard.
You want me to go? You want to go?
I'll go. I feel like you went last time.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think you're right.
You'll go on the next one. That's for sure.
Yes, I will. That's definitely for sure. All right. Want to use some scissors? I almost cut my hair.
Yep, I do.
Like just.
I almost scratched my record.
There you go.
I'm going to scratch Helpless, mate.
There is a town in North Ontario. Extreme comfort memory to spare.
Ooh. Okay. Why?
Well, because I think your point about it sounds like it could have been on Harvest is a good one. Yeah. So it's very much seems like Neil Young's solo, which is funny because I say that and you actually have a Stephen Stills solo song. But anyways, and it's just it's just a real sort of
it's a downer song.
Downtrodden point in the song.
Yeah, in the album. Yeah, I can see that. I can't argue. I've always liked the song. I think it's really nice.
It is, but if I had to.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen. I mean, you know, again, everybody had like two main songs, right?
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have seen Neil Young pick like, hey, I'm going to do a song that really rocks.
Yeah.
You know, I can see that. I think I'm actually just going to go with Everybody, I Love You.
Okay.
I,
just because I do the like unknown.
It at the end. Yeah, I do like it at the end. It actually does kind of rock a little bit. But I think it would have been cool to even just end with Country Girl, just because it's like it's a little bit of a longer. It's the longest song in the album,
and yeah,
it does have like these does have these different sections and whatnot. So I think that would have been fine. I could even make the argument you could have even switched these songs around, just ending with Country Girl.
Hmm. Snap.
Yeah. So there's that.
We haven't even considered the game rearrange a track
yet. The rearrange a track. Just wait. That's a whole new podcast all on
yeah,
its own,
man. Yeah.
All on its own. Rearrange a track. You know, or like, dude, we could have other episodes, the B-side swap. Be like, oh man, I totally get rid of it. They should have put the B-side. Like, how does Soul to Squeeze like not make it from
Red? Dude. You know? Yes.
Or some others.
I was also gonna comment on it because I remember you saying something when we were doing a previous episode. I think it was TV on the Radio about how like your download didn't have all the songs.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, when I downloaded the first time Old Dirty Bastard, Return to the 36 Chambers. It had all the songs, but it like insisted
put them
on
a different
order that is not the order they're in. So when I heard the album in the correct order, I was like, huh. I wasn't sure, but then I was like, this actually does make a lot more sense because there were some parts where there was clearly a transition and it just went somewhere else entirely.
It's tough when that happens because, again, your brain is so used to hearing things in a certain way. And, you know, we're finishing one song and hearing the next one. It's you know, it's hard to unhear those things for sure.
Yeah, it is. But hopefully no one's going to unhear Deja Vu and tell us what you would scratch. Why would you scratch it? Did we make a bad choice below?
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
And now, having said that, it is time to go on the Dude and Grim Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tings. Copyright 2023, the Dude and Grim Show.